Good morning. Today's Daf and Yomah is Nun Dalet. We are starting today with the Mishnah Nun Gimel Amud Beis, and we are in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We already made the smoke, the pillar of smoke. So we are now we have the Anan, and at this point in time now we are prepared for the Kohen Gadol to go back out, take the blood, and start doing the Hazas in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. I'll start with the Mishnah. Mishnei tell Aaron, so from the point in time where the Aaron was taken, meaning the Mishnah over here is described by Sheni. By Sheni, there was no Aaron Kodesh. We already discussed this earlier in our Perek. The Aaron Kodesh was put into Geniza by Yoshiyahu, although that is not a unanimous viewpoint. There are viewpoints that the Aaron was sent into Galus. It was sent into exile. Does our Mishnah take a stand on that issue? Please hold that thought. We're going to come back to that thought in just a moment. So, Mishanita Aaron, so the Aaron was taken. Evan Haisa Sham, Yamos, Nevim Rishonim, Ushisia Haisa Nikres. So there was an Aaron, it was there from the Nevim Rishonim, the early Nevim. So Rashi over here says that we're talking about the really early Nevim. We're talking about David Shmuel. That's the, as per the Gemara and Sota. So, there was a stone over there. We're going to be discussing the stone in more detail over the course of today's daf, or the end of today's daf. We are going to, give some more description to the stone, but right now we can name it. It's called the Evan Shisia. Okay, Gavoh Min Haaretz Shel Shetzbao. So it was a little bit above ground by three etzbaos, just 3 inches above ground. Ve'aliyah Hayanosein. Sorry, Ve'aliyah Hayanosein. It was placed on top of it. Natal Es Hadam, meaning the iron was placed on top of the Evan Shisia. So fine. So, but right now there is no iron. So Natal es Adam Mishaya Mamari's bow. So now he took the bowl of blood. This is the bowl of blood of the par. The par was already shechted, if you remember. And the blood was given to another Kohen so that the other Kohen would stir it so that it wouldn't congeal. So now the Kohen Gadol is taking the bowl from that Kohen and Nichnas Lamakum Shenichnas. So now he goes back into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So of course he had to exit the Kodesh HaKadoshim in order to retrieve the bowl. Now once he has the bowl of the blood of the par in his hand, he goes back in. Where does he stand? Exactly where he stood. So Nichnas Lamakum Shenichnas Ve'amad B'Makum She'amad. So he goes back in the same way he came back. He went out. He stands where he stood. Ve'hiza Mimenu. And now he does the Hazah. And how does he do the Hazah? So this is going to sound familiar. Achas Lamala, so he does one above, Vishev Lamata, and 7 below. Velo Yamiskavin Le Hazos Lo Lamala Velo Lamata. Now the Hazah did not go above, not go below. Ela Kematzlif, but rather was like a Matzlif. So Rashi over here just simply describes the Matzlif, Vishura Zu Tachazu. So basically what he did is he created a line of blood, one above the other. It was a row. It was a row of blood. Rashi goes on. So lo yadati lishono. So Rashi over here says, not particularly clear about what this language is of matzleif, meaning I know what it looks like. It's basically going to look like a row of blood, one on top of the other. Earlier in the Masechta, Rashi does offer a pshat. Basically, it's like makus, right? When you give makus, you never want to give makus to the same exact space, place on the body that you gave previously. You want to kind of distribute the makus on the body. So basically what you're going to do is that you're going to deliver the makos one right above the other. So similarly over here, so the blood's going to be sprinkled one above the other. What does it mean that one's lamala, the other one's lamata, one's above, the other one's below? So not particularly clear. Rashi over here writes, velo haya miskave, no, not that Rashi, sorry. Yeah, that Rashi. V'lo haya miskavin lazos lo lamala, sh'tei achas lamala b'chuda shel kaporos ha'olyon v'sheva lamata mi'emtsa, sh'arei lo ala kaporos nogin, ala la'aretz noflos. So Rashi over here just simply points out that it's going to land on the ground. Obviously in the absence of the Aron, so it's not going to, lamala lamata doesn't mean that one's going to be on the covering of the Aron, the other one's going to be below the covering. It just simply means that it's going to be in a row. So what does the words lamala lamata mean in terms of the Kohen? So it could simply be that the way that the hand of the Kohen Gadol is configured when he does it. In other words, when he does lamala, he goes upward with his hand. It's like an upward motion, and lamata is a downward motion with his hand. That could be the simple pshat in terms of lamala lamata. And v'kachay amona. Now when doing these 8 hazos, so he's now going to count. So, and how is he going to count? So the counting is going to be a little bit strange, because he's not going to count 1 through 8, but he's going to count 1, and then 1 and 1, 1 and 2, we're familiar. V'kachayamoneh. Achas, achas v'achas, achas v'shem, achas v'shosh, achas v'arba, achas v'chamesh, achas v'shesh, achas v'sheva. Okay, not clear exactly why it is that he's always got to keep that, the first huzzah that he did in an upward motion. Why does that have to remain a separate count, and why is that counted together with the others? I don't have a good offering in terms of why it's counted that way, but that's how the counting is done. Now what he's going to do is that he's going to go out and he's going to put it on a base. Remember, all the bowls in the base of Mikdash, the Kli Shavuos, they didn't have a bottom to it, a bottom base to it. They were basically triangular. It came down to a point. We never really want the bowls to be settled on the ground. They were always concerned that the blood was going to congeal, and so therefore it had to be held in the hand. So for this particular bowl, remember, the Kohen Gadol is operating by himself. So he needs a little bit of assistance. So therefore, there is going to be a base that's created in order to hold this bowl. So Yatzav Inichal Kena Zahav Shebehechal. So he puts it on a base, on a golden base that was in the Hechal. Hevielos Asir. Now they bring him the goat. Now remember, by the goat hasn't even been shechted yet. So obviously, going to shech the goat. So Hevielos Asir, obviously this is Asir LaHashem. So Shachs v'kibah memizrach esdamo nechnas l'makom shenechnas v'amad b'makom shamad v'izah mimenu achas amala v'shev l'mata v'kach ayamona. I'm just right. Everything here is straightforward. It's just everything that we did with the dam, the part we're doing with the dam is the ear. So achas achas v'achas achas v'shayim v'chule. And so the hazos by the blood of the goat are going to be identical to the hazos of the blood of the par. Yatzav inich al kanazav asheni shebeichel. Now there's going to be a second base over there in which he could put down the bowl of the blood of the goat. And Rabbi Yehuda Amar lo yasham ela kan echad belvad. Now Rabbi Yehuda says there was only one base over there that was only able to hold one bowl. Nato dam apar v'hiniach dam asir. As far as the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda, so the Gemara later on is going to discuss what exactly the debating two holding bases, one holding base. Okay, we're going to come back to that a little bit later on. Anyway, he takes the blood of the par and he leaves now the dam of the seer. And now hazad that's going to be done on the parochah, separating the kosher and the kosher kadashim. He's doing it while standing in the heichal, facing the kodesh hakadashim. So achas lamala v'sheva lamata v'lo hayam iskavim v'chulei. Okay, and v'kach hayamone v'chulei. Okay, and as far as the number of azos and the counting of the azos, so everything exactly like before, meaning it's going to be 8 in total. Now to dam asir v'nich dam apar. Now he's going to take the blood of the seer and he's going to put down the dam apar. V'yiza mimen ala paroches. And that's going to be sprinkled on the paroches. Shekin neged ha'aron mi bachutz. Achas amala v'sheva lamata v'chulei. Okay. So now how many times have we done hazah? So we've done it once with the par in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the direction of the Aron, or in the absence of the Aron, onto the Evan HaShasiyah. Then we're doing it with the Dam of the Seer. Then we're repeating both of those outside onto the Parochas. Outside over here means in the Eichal, facing the Parochas of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, once with the par, once with the Seer. So now we've done it a total of 4 times. The Kohen Gadol has done it a total of 4 times. Ira dama parla soch dama seir v'nasan es amale birekan. And then he would mix the bloods, right? Basically, like you see at Sheva Brachos, right? They pour into one cup and then they pour back into the other cup and the bloods are mixed in. The Mishnah stops over there, right? There's more to go. We're going to come back, obviously, and we're going to continue with the hazos. But now we have done the hazos, I was going to say the most important. It's not. I don't know what's the most important, but for the Yom Kippur and the hazaos that are done in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is not done at any other point in time. There are carbon chataos, special carbon chataos, chatos apnimios, where the blood is going to be sprinkled in the heichal, but no other time, no other point in time is the blood going to be sprinkled in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So obviously, this represents the only time of the year that the hazaos is going to be done in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Okay. There's a lot of points to pick out of the Mishnah. So the Gemara right now is going to focus on the first word of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, Mishinitel Aron. The Aron was taken. Now, Mishinignaz Lokitani Ela Mishinitel. So the Gemara right away picks up on that. And the Gemara notes, so Tanan Kamanda Amar Aron Galal Abaval. So our Mishnah is taking a firm stance on what happened to the Aron, meaning the Aron was taken. Taken where? So our Mishnah seems to be of the position that was taken to Bavel. So if you recall, and we're going to go over it again right now, and that is that the Aron, when it was taken away. Now over here, it not only is it confusing in terms of where the Aron went, it's also confusing in terms of who took the Aron. So if you remember back in Shkalim and a couple days ago in the Daf, we said that Yoshiyahu put in Geniza. Melech Yoshiyahu. So he was a king that presided over the Jewish people, just a couple of years prior to the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, knowing and seeing and probably also he had the benefit of Nevuah as well, or he had Nevi'im that told him. So he knew that the impending destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so he put it into Geniza. That's one approach that we saw a couple days ago. From our Gemara over here, it says that our Mishnah is in disagreement with that viewpoint. Our Mishnah says that it was taken out to Bavel, and it sounds like, and you'll see in just a moment, it sounds like that it wasn't Yoshiyahu who took it out to Bavel, but rather it was Nebuchadnezzar who exiled the Aron out to Bavel. So it's not only a question of where did the Aron go, but it also is a question of who took the Aron. Right? And the two questions seem to be connected and linked together. So the Gemara says, the Tanya Malanta Nebraisa, Rebbe Eliezer Omer, Aron Galal Bavel. So she tells Rebbe Eliezer that the Aron was taken out to Bavel, Shenemar. Uleshuvas Hashanah Shalach HaMelech Nebuchadnezzar, Vayaviyu Bavela, Im Kli Chemdas Beis Hashem. So over here, the pasuk that's being cited over here in Divrei Hayamim certainly sounds like that it was Nebuchadnezzar responsible for taking out the Aron from Bavel. Okay, so again, it's just a very different opinion than Yoshiyahu putting in Geniza, right? By the time Nebuchadnezzar is conquering, Yoshiyahu is at this point in time long and gone. All right, it was his sons who took over as the kings. It was Yehoyachaz and Yechaniah and Zidkiyahu, and I left out one, but Yehoahaz. There were four more kings that occurred after Yoshiyahu. So over here, this position is really different than the position of Yoshiyahu putting in Geniza, meaning it happened some years later, and it also is Nebuchadnezzar responsible. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Amar Aron Galal LaBavel Shenamar. Now, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, the Rashbi, so he's in agreement with Rabbi Eliezer. It's interesting. The Bryce over here brings it down as if it's two different opinions. They really are in agreement with one another. Not really sure why the Bryce brings it down as if this is a differing opinion. So he says that the Aron was taken out to Bavel Shenamar Lo Yivaser Davar Amar Hashem Elo Aser Sedibur Shebo. So nothing was left over. Lo Yivaser Davar. And Davar over here is a reference to the Dibros, which means that the Aron was taken out. The Aron which is housing the Aser Sedibros. Rav Yehuda Omer. Now we have Rav Yehuda Ben Lakish, but this is still part of the Braisa and it's a Tana. So Rav Yehuda Omer, Aron Bimkomo Nigna Shenemar. Vayirosh Abadim. Min HaKodesh El Pnei Adavir. Al Pnei Adavir. Velo Yirachutza. Vayusham Ad Hayom Hazem. Okay, so based on the pasuk in Malachim, it describes the Aron as being there, meaning in that area, in that vicinity, Ad Hayom Hazeh, and in perpetuity. So that means to say that the Aron was always there, and even if it's not visible, it just simply means that it's in the vicinity. But according to this viewpoint, tucked away somewhere underneath, hidden somewhere under the area of the Beis HaMikdash, but it's in that area. Okay, so over here in this Braisa, so we see it's a machlokas in terms of who's responsible of taking away the Aron and where it was taken to. So the first two positions, Rabbi Elazar and the Rashbi, says that it was taken to Bavel, and Shitas Rav Yehuda is that it was still bimkomo, it was in its place, meaning again, not visible, it was somewhere subterranean, but it was there. Good, and our Mishnah over here, right, so it's a Star Mishnah, it's so interesting. Our Mishnah over here is in alignment with the positions of Rabbi Eliezer and the Rashbi, that it was taken out to Bavel. Upligi de'ula, continuing now in the Gemara, with three lines on the bottom. Anun gimel amud beis. And all this is not in agreement with the position of Ula, meaning specifically the Braisa and Rabbi Shimon saying that the Aron was taken to Bavel. Ula gives us a different version of Rabbi Shimon, of the Rashbi. Upligi de'ula damar Ula. Shall Rabbi Masya ben Charashes, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Beromi, v'chima achrish Rabbi Eliezer lamdeno par mishonim v'shni Aron gal abaval. So a dialogue that occurs over here, according to Ula, where Rabbi Masya asked the Rashbi the following question. Now, according to Rabbi Eliezer, I know there's a lot of names over here. Keep straight, But in other words, the conversation is between a Tana and the Rashbi regarding Rabbi Eliezer's viewpoint. Now, and basically the Rashbi is going to, in just a moment, say, okay, that's his viewpoint. That's not my viewpoint. Tell me that the Arvin was taken out to Bavel. Two psukim? Where are these two psukim coming from? So the Gemara goes on to say, so Rishona Hadamaran. So first of all, the first pasuk, so that we already cited, that was the pasuk in Shayahu. That was the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. Ulechuvas Hashana Shalach HaMelech Nevuchadnezzar. Okay, that pasuk we saw earlier. And Rishona Hadamaran Vayivu Bavela Im Klei Chemdas Beis Hashem. Fine. And Shnia Maihi. What's the second pasuk that supports Rabbi Eliezer's viewpoint that the Aron was taken out to Bavel? So Dichsiv, the pasuk says Vayitzim in Batzion Kol Hadara. So what left Batzion? So this is from the first parak of Eicha. So all the Hadara, literally the beauty, left. And my Kol Hadara Chadara. So the Hey, the Ches are interchangeable. Two guttural letters, and so so Hadara could be understood as Chadera, meaning that which is in the Chadra Chadarim, that which is in the most interior of the rooms in the Beis HaMikdash, and obviously it's a reference to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and obviously it's a reference to the Aron. Okay, so two psukim that support Rabbi Lazar's viewpoint, that the Aron was taken out to Bavel. Now, back to the Braisa, top of Nundalam and Aleph. Ata Mai Ata Omer. So now, this is a direct question that was asked to the Rashbi. Good, that's Rabbi Eliezer's viewpoint. What's your viewpoint? So now, remember, the Braisa that we started off our Gemara discussing said that, according to Rabbi Shimon, it was taken out to Bavel. Ula disagrees. Ula's of the position. He had a different Masorah that Rabbi Shimon disagrees. And now we're going to hear what Rabbi Shimon himself says. So Atamai Ta'omer, so Amar Lo, Shani Omer, Amar Bim Kamonignaz, Shamru Vayarich Labadim V'chulei. And Rabbi Shimon says, I think the Aron never moved. In other words, it was kept in its location. Again, subterranean, not visible to you and I, but it's there. But it's there. And it was not taken out to Bavel. Okay, so not only is there a machlokus amongst the Tanaim where the Aron was taken, but even within the Shita of the Rashbi, there's a machlokus in terms of what his position is regarding the Aron. Okay. V'chol Hecha, Amar Le Rava, sorry. Amalei Rabbi Leula, my mashma dechsiv ayusham ada yom hazeh. So Rabbi says to Ula, so how does that pasuk teach us? So it says because in the pasuk of Malachim it says vayusham, the Aron was there ad hayom hazeh until this very day. Now, right, when we're reading Chumash and we're reading Navi, we're going to hear that expression a number of times, ada yom hazeh. So what does that mean? So ostensibly what it means is that it's for any reader who reads that pasuk. Meaning whether that reader is living in the 1st century, 10th century, or even the 21st century. Ani Yom Hazeh means in perpetuity. That is the understanding, and that's why, according to Rabbi Shimon, at least Ula's version of Rabbi Shimon, there's no way that the Aron could be anywhere else because the Pasuk in Malachim, in the building of the first base of Mikdash says that the Aron was there, Ani Yom Hazeh in perpetuity. So that means that the Aron could never have left the premises. Okay. So the Gemara says, now is this true? Every single time you hear the words Ada Yom Hazeh in Chumash and in Navi, you mean to tell me that it's in perpetuity? The Gemara says it's not true. And the Gemara now is really going to challenge this idea. So number one, we have in Shoftim, in the beginning of Shoftim, Vesa Yevusi Yoshev Yerushalayim, Lo Rishu B'nei Binyamin, V'yashav Yevusi is B'nei Binyamin V'yushalayim Ada Yom Hazeh. So Yevusi weren't chased out. Meaning as much as Yoshua conquered Eretz Yisrael, so it was not a full conquering, and some parts were left, there were still Canaanim in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? And in the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, the first parak of Sefer Shoftim, so we hear about it. Yevusi was in Yerushalayim, the B'nai Binyamin did not chase them out, and so the Yevusi were living in Yerushalayim together with Sheva Binyamin. So, Hachinami de lo galu. Now, you mean to tell me, now, the pasuk goes on to conclude over there, and this is true, Ad HaYom HaZeh. And for both Yevusi and for Sheva Binyamin. And the Gemara says, but that's not true. Meaning, Shevet Binyamin did not live in Yerushalayim in perpetuity. In fact, there was a period of time where they were shipped out of Yerushalayim. And we know this to be so, and the Gemara just simply establishes that this was the case. We learned in the Brisa of Atayin, Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Chamisha V'Shaim Shana Lo Avar, Ish B'Yehuda. So after Nebuchadnezzar destroys Yerushalayim, so Yerushalayim was desolate for how long? For 52 years. Now, how do we know that it was desolate for 52 years? Now, by the way, the exile itself lasted for 70 years. But we're just talking about the number of years of full desolation, 52. So, and how do I know that? Shenemar, the pasuk says, Al ha'arim esa b'chivenehi, al na'os midvar kina, ki nitzchu mibli ish over. So the Navi Yirmiyahu goes on to describe that nobody was there. V'lo shamu kol mikneh me'ofa shamayim v'ad behema. Not only was there no human population, there was no animal population. So nadadu halachu. And they left and it was gone. Okay, good. So that's enough. But in terms of the Gemara, you don't get it that often. So here we get it. We're going to get Gematria. So V'lo Shamu Kol Mikneh Me'ofa. I'm sorry. And Behema BeGematria 52. And Behema in Gematria is a total of 52. So the V'tanya Rabbi Yossi Omer Shev Hashanim Niskaimu Gafris V'Malch Be'aretz Yisrael. Not only was the 52 years of desolation. On top of that, you can also add 7 years. Nothing, absolutely nothing, right? The ground was salt and sulfur. In other words, you couldn't grow anything for 7 of those 52 years. V'am Rav Yochanan Maitama de Rabbi Yossi, Asya Bris, it's based on Exer Shavak, Sivacha, V'higbir Bris L'Rabim, Shavua Echad. Shavua Echad over here does not mean a week, it means 7 years. Uksiv Asam V'amru Al Asher Azvuz Bris Hashem Elokei Avosam. And a pasuk from the Tochacha, of Al Azvu Es Brisa Elokei Avosam. So for the fact that we no longer had fidelity towards the Bris, so we were shipped out, and for 7 years the land was fully desolate. Okay, so all this brings us now to a head of a question, and that is that we said that Ad Hayom Hazeh, it's got to mean in perpetuity. I just gave you a good example. Right, the pasuk in the beginning of Shoftim, where Binyamin was in Yerushalayim Ad Yom Hazeh, and it's not true. There was a period of time where they were shipped out. So what does it mean when it says Ad Yom Hazeh? So it doesn't mean in perpetuity, it just simply means for a long time. But the whole source of Rabbi Shimon, the Rashbi, that the Aaron was in the Beis HaMikdash in perpetuity, is because the pasuk says Ad Yom Hazeh. So right now, it sounds like the Rashbi, his argument is not a valid argument. Okay, so the Gemara defends the Rashbi. So you have to look for keywords. When it just says Ad Hayom Hazeh by itself, okay, so it just means for a long time. But when it says Sham Ad Hayom Hazeh, it's there Ad Hayom Hazeh, so that means in perpetuity. So the Gemara says, okay, V'chol Eichad Yichsiv Sham La'olamu. So the Gemara says, okay, I'm going to test that theory. Is that true? So Meitzvei, U'mehem im b'nei Shimon ha'achu la'har se'ir anashim chamesh me'os, U'paltem v'na'arev v'rafya, Vuziel b'nei Yisha, b'nei Yish'i, b'rosham v'yaku, sheri saplaita la'amalek, v'yashvu sham ad hayom hazeh. Okay, so the pasuk in Divrei Yamim describes Shimon going and conquering and an area in Eretz Yisrael and being there ad hayom hazeh. But not just ad hayom hazeh, but the pasuk reads sham ad hayom hazeh. And you just told me that sham is a key word. And when you see the word sham, it means in perpetuity. And it's not true. Meaning, where's Shevet Shimon right now? Right? Exactly. We don't know. And the Gemara expresses this very question. Ukvar, Allah Sancher, Melchashor, Ubilbo Kol Aratzos, Shenemar Vasir Gvulos Amim, Vasodo Seyem, so Sasti. So, and we know that the Sancher took out the 10 northern tribes and sent them into exile. And we don't know where they are. Hence the 10 lost tribes. So once again, now we have with the word Sham, and Ad Hayom Hazeh, and we know it's not in perpetuity, and how is the Rashbi going to respond to that? And so the Gemara says to Yufta. Now, the Gemara has a really powerful ending to the discussion, which is, okay, the Rashbi's position is really difficult to defend. So the whole source that the Aron was in the area of the Beis HaMikdash, and it was put into Geniza. And I know that based on the Pasuk in Malachim, because it says that the Aron was Sham Ad Hayom Hazeh, and that means in perpetuity, but the Gemara points out, but it's not always the case. We just cited a source where you have the word Sham and Ad Hayom Hazeh, and it's not in perpetuity. And the Gemara basically leaves us off with, does not seem that Rabbi Shimon's position is a defensible position. Okay. Yeah, I was surprised. In other words, a tiyufta on what seems to be agadata. I mean, in other words, right? It's somewhere between agadata and halacha. Meaning, they are debating what happened to the Aron, but when all said and done, meaning what's the halachic ramifications? And the Gemara over here says tiyufta. I was surprised also by the tiyufta. I agree. Amar Rav Nachman Tana v'chachamim omrim Aron belishkas dir ha'itzim ayuganos. The Gemara not yet done with the discussion of where the Aron went. So over here, by the way, I know all this sounds familiar because we saw this all in the Yerushalmi Shkalim pretty recently. So a lot of this discussion is great review of what we saw in the Gemara Yerushalmi. So Amar Rav Nachman by Yitzchak, Amar Rav Nachman Tana, we learned in the Braisa. According to the Chachamim Amrim Amrim Belishkas Dira Eitzim Ayaganos, it was put into the Dira Eitzim. So there were a number of chambers over there, specifically one designated for wood, where the wood was kept. So tucked away somewhere in that chamber, that's where you're going to find the Aron. No, you don't want to find it, but in other words, that's where it was put in Geniza. I'm Rav Nachman Yitzchak Afanami Tanina. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, right, different Rav Nachman, but he's in agreement with the previous Rav Nachman in that I have a similar Masorah. And that is based on the Mishnah in Shkalim. Okay, good. So we get to review a lot of the Gemara. We get to review the Mishnah of Shkalim. And that is Maisa Bekoin Echashayim Esasek V'ra Ritzba Mishuna Mechavro Seha. So there was a Kohen just wandering around in the Beis HaMikdash. Right? The Mishnah over here does not give a complimentary description to this Kohen. He was Misasek. He was just wandering around. Right? He was not purposeful. And he wasn't... whatever. You can... What exactly was going on over there? Not clear, but the Mishnah was certainly not complimentary. And he found a tile that was a little bit off tilt. Rashi describes over here that this tile was actually a little bit higher than the other tiles. Oh. So he understood. And now he's ready to reveal because he figured it out. That tile that's offset, oh, I know what that is. That's a secret entrance into some sort of secret chamber underground. And I'm embellishing over here because I have no idea. But in other words, but he was about to reveal a secret. And he died before the opportunity to tell. So, to Dr. Zaghi's question, which I'm already anticipating. So how do we know the story? Okay. Okay. I got it. It's an old marriage. I know it well. So anyway, so I don't know how we know the story, but we have a Masorah. And we know now that that's where the Aron was put in Geniza. Okay, so it's funny. It's a Stam Mishnah, by the way. Meaning, we have just cited this morning a lot of Brises and Amoraim weighing in on the issue. And meanwhile, it's a Stam Mishnah that says that the Aron was in the Dira Eitzim. So it's funny. In other words, okay, so it's a Stam Mishnah. So, but Brises can argue with Stam Mishnayos. And okay, so not everyone's in agreement with the Stam Mishnah and Shkalim. So my Havavid, what was he doing? So the Gemara wants just a little bit more information. So Amar Rabbi Chelba Misasek Bekardumo Ahaya. Okay, and I don't know what we get from this extra information, but basically he was playing around with a hammer. I don't know how that helps us, but anyway. Tan Debe Rabbi Shmuel Bar Tana Braisa. Shnei Kohanim Balei Momim Hayu Matliim Be'Eitzim. There were two Kohanim who happened to have had physical blemishes, therefore can't do the Avoda, but there are other activities that they could do in the Beis HaMikdash. Notably, check the wood. Admittedly, it doesn't sound like exciting work, but it's necessary work to be done. A block of wood that has worms in it. So amongst the Rishonim, there are various opinions of what to be done. Either the wood itself is possible to be put onto the Mizbeach. It's like the wood is like a Ba'amum, so to say, if it's got worms on it. Or the other viewpoint is that no, that the worms themselves cannot be put onto the Mizbech. You deworm it, and then you put the block on afterwards. Oh, one of two, either way. Right? By the way, Rashi over here seems to weigh in on this issue. Rashi, right on this daf, he says now we learned the Mishnah Midos, call Eitz Sheyesh Bo Tola'as, Pasul Mizbeach. It sounds like that once the wood is found to have worms in it, that's it. Meaning, right, simple reading is that it's disqualified, meaning even once the wood is dewormed, so to say, or whatever the case is. So they were deworming the wood, or checking the wood for worms, and whatever tool they were working with, it was an axe, it was a saw, whatever it was, so it bounced, naflusham, it fell over there, and a fire went down and consumed that tool. Okay, so again, right, you get close to that area and you get burnt. Rabbi Yehuda Ramiksiv. Okay, Adkan. That takes us now to the end of the Gemara's discussion. Right, it took up almost the first half of today's daf. Where is the Aron? Okay, the simple answer is we don't know. But if we could just expand that a little bit, it's a major machlokas amongst the Tanaim, even amongst the Amoraim, in terms of what happened to the Aron, what was the fate of the Aron from the around the time of the destruction of the first base of Mikdash. During the entirety of the second base of Mikdash, there was no Aron, and what happened to it? So we have various viewpoints. If I can, by the way, let's just summarize into three basic viewpoints. Right, one is that it was taken out to Bavel. Now, after that point in time, we don't know. Meaning, but it was taken out to Bavel. Number two, it's Bimkomo. It's in the same place, obviously not above ground, somewhere below ground, but in that area, in the area of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, somewhere subterranean. And the third viewpoint is that somewhere else in the area of the Beis HaMikdash, right? The Dir Eitzim is a possible candidate. Okay, so there are, I could organize it like three opinions, but okay, that's what we get out of the first half of today's daf. Okay, as long as we're discussing the Aron, so the Gemara is going to give us other notes regarding the Aron, when it was there. Rav Yehuda notes a discrepancy between the Psukim. Vayirosh Abadim, Uksiv Velo Yiru Echutza. So the poles of the Aron that were placed into the first base of Mikdash, so they were seen, they were not seen. So the Psukim are unclear in terms of whether the poles were visible. So how could they be seen and not seen? Nirin Ve'ein Nirin. So they were seen and not seen. That's the resolution. Good. What does that mean? You probably know this already, but the Gemara is going to spell it out. So on one hand, a description of the poles. Maybe they were taken out once they were put into the base of Mikdash. They were not. They were kept there. Maybe because the room was not big enough, so basically we tore holes in the curtain so that the poles would come out the holes. No. So, but rather, they basically went up to the curtain. They even protruded a little bit, not through the curtain, but they pushed at the curtain a little bit. And so therefore, when you're looking at it from the outside, so it looks like the contour of the chest of a woman. Okay, a lot of today's daf, by the way, is for mature audiences. I may have to exclude myself from the discussion. But the Gemara over here is going to basically give a lot of allusions to women, to relationships, physical relationships, intimate relationships. So a lot of that in describing the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Okay, we unfortunately are given a really secular view of intimacy, and you know, and it's funny. I know we live in a world that is beyond explicit and graphic in terms of sexual nature, but generally speaking, though, we're a little bit prudish about intimacy, and as a result of that, so the Gemara over here is going to seem weird to us. It's going to seem a little bit strange to us, but you know, you're going to see very clearly in today's daf, like a really different and a very open view of intimacy, at least in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We'll see a lot of it today. So first of all, Pasuk and Shir HaShirim, which we know is understood as an analogy, and over here, Bein Shaddai Yalin, describing the chest of a woman. So, and over here, like an actual image of when you're looking at the parochas from the outside, that's what it looks like as the two poles are pushing through the curtain. Amrav Katina B'Shar Shayu Yisrael Olin L'Regel Megalin L'Hemetz HaParoches. So, and when Yisrael was Olin L'Regel, so what they would do is they would peel back the curtain. And Umarin L'Hemetz HaKruvim. And they would show the Jewish people the Kruvim. Now, this Gemara, by the way, just in general, is really challenging, meaning who is allowed to see into the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Remember the workers as they were being lowered into the Kodesh HaKadoshim to do basic maintenance in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so they were kept in a box so they couldn't see any of it. And meanwhile, on Yantiv, right? Let's show everybody, right? There's Kruvim on top of the Aron. Let's show everybody the Kruvim. So it might it's. Yeah, right. There's a very small vantage point. I hear you and I agree. It's a really small vantage point to see it. Like, how many people could see at one time? Right? It wasn't, right. When we say public display, what does that mean? Okay, I'm with you. So, Umar lehem es akruvim. Shayu ma'urim zebezev arm lehem ru'u chibaschem lefnei ha'makom kechiva zachar nekeva. And the kruvim, so they were in an embrace. And Rashi over here, right? I'll just read the Rashi. Lashon dibuk kamo elin shenichbash ma'ura beklipas of maseches beitza im hayu ma'urz begidim asuros. So fine. So it was a total embrace. I'm sorry. I wanted to read the previous Rashi. So kruvim medubakim zebeze va'ochzin umechabkim zeze kezachar chobeges anekeva. They were in an embrace. Right. Rashi was more graphic than I was, but they were in an embrace. So and again, the analogy over here is the relationship between the Jewish people and the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Mezer Rav Chista v'lo yavur laros kabelas hakodesh v'am Rav Yehuda amara b'sharach nasas kelim l'nirtak shalahem. So the Gemara is bothered because here Kodesh HaKadoshim was on full display for the entire Jewish people. Meanwhile, when we traveled in the desert, before we made any move whatsoever, so the kelim were put into sacks, into bags, so that even the Levim wouldn't see the kelim themselves. So the Gemara says, I'm not following. In the Midbar, everything had to be covered. And then when we're in the Beis HaMikdash, everything's on full display. So Amar Rav Nachman, Mashal Akala, Kos Man Shei Beveis Aviyat Tznua, Mibala, Kevin Shabbas LaBeis Chameha, Ein Tznua, Mibala. So the Gemara says, yeah, but there are stages in relationships, right? We know how marriage works. There are two stages of marriage. There is Erisin and there's Nisuin. So by Erisin, so they're married, but she's living with her parents and he's living with his parents. And so that they're married, but they're living in two separate houses. Again, we put Erisin and Nisuin in one ceremony, so we don't experience this nowadays. But back in the day, so this was a year-long process of Erisin. And then Nisuin, and then they moved together. So obviously, during that first stage of marriage, so there was no intimacy. And that by analogy, is the Jewish people in the Midbar. That's Erisin. And then when we go into Eretz Yisrael, and we have the Beis HaMikdash, that's Nisuin. Okay, so the Gemara says that's the difference between the two. Okay, Meisav Rav Chana bar Rav Ketina, Meisav Bekohen Echad Shayim Masasek. So, meanwhile, we go back to that Mishnah and Shkalim describing the Kohen who was just fooling around over there in the base of Mikdash, and he's ready to tell people where the Aron was, and he died. So I'm relating his Garsha Kamart. So again, in our analogy of a marriage, so you're talking about now. Gerushin, meaning what happened was is that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And granted, provided that there was a second Beis HaMikdash, but the relationship was broken. Nizgar shechazul chivasa rishona. So okay. And eventually it will be reunited. Now the Gemara says b'mayaskinan. Now the Gemara says, now this description over here, it is confusing. We're talking about poles of the Aron, and we're talking about a curtain. Those two points of information don't go together. So, now in the first Beis HaMikdash, it wasn't a curtain, it was actual wall. We described this earlier in our perek. So, we're talking about the second Beis HaMikdash, right? So the Gemara says, me have a kruvim. Yeah, but there were no kruvim in the second Beis HaMikdash. So it is all but confusing. What does that mean that the Jewish people got to see the Kruvim? How is that possible? If there was a Parochas, that means the second Beis HaMikdash, but no Aron. And if it's the first Beis HaMikdash, well, there was an Aron, but there was no Parochas. So all this is confusing. So the Gemara says, Lolam b'mikdash rishon, my Parochas, Parochas debave. So the Gemara says, no, we're describing the first Beis HaMikdash, And when we say we're peeling back the curtain, we're not talking about the curtain of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but rather we're talking about the curtains that are in the doorways, right? The word Bava is a doorway, a gateway, right? You know this, Bava Kama, Bava Mitzia, Bava Basra, meaning the first, it was a time where the Masechta was called simply Nizakin, right? 30 prakim long. And then it was broken up into three doorways, right? Each of the Masechtas. The first doorway, the second doorway, all right, the last doorway. Okay. Anyway, the Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rav Shlosha Asar Parochas Hayu B'Mikdash. There were 13 Parochas in the base of Mikdash. Shiva Kenege Shiva Sha'arim. Seven corresponding to the seven gates, right? How many gates are there into the Azara? Right. The numbers. It's a variable number. Sometimes we hear seven. Sometimes we hear 13. Anyway, so right now we're going with the number seven. And Shtaim Achas L'Pischo Shohecha, V'Achas L'Pischo Sho'ulam. And then one for the entrance of the Hechel, the other one was for the entrance of the Ulam. Shtaim B'Dvir, two for the Dvir, that's the entrance into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. U'Shtaim K'Negdam Be'Aliyah. And then when you go to the second floor, same thing as well. Rav Acher B'Yaakov Amar, before we get to Rav Acher B'Yaakov. So what comes out now over here is that we're peeling back the curtain so that people can see. So that's the first base of Mikdash and the actual Kruvim. And the Parochas over here is not the curtain separating the Hechel and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but rather basically curtains to doorways. Okay, by the way, Ben, going back to your point, that makes our vantage point even smaller, meaning there was now a physical wall. Oh, there was a little doorway that allowed entrance into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with a curtain over there. So now you're talking about a tiny vantage point. Okay. Rav Acher bar Yaakov Amar La'olam B'Mikdash Sheni. We're talking about the second base HaMikdash. U'Kruvim D'Tziraso HaVekayma. And the actual Kruvim themselves weren't there, because remember, for the second base of Mikdash, there was no Aron. The Gemara is assuming there was also no Kruvim as well. And so what was there? There was a mural. There were murals in the area of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Dichtiv is called Kiros HaBayis, Meisav Kela, Kruvim Utmuras, Peturei Tzitzim, Vitzipe Zav, Mi Yasher Ala Mechuka, V'Ksiv Kama'er Ish Ulivayos. So my kema'er ish ulevayos amarava barav shila ki ish hama'ura bi'leviya shalom. And over here, what is the mural depicting? So it's depicting a husband with his wife. Okay. That's the mural in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Okay. Like I said in the beginning of, not the beginning, but right, earlier this morning, okay, things that are just, sound a little bit strange. But meanwhile, that was there, and that was what was being shown off to the people. So Amar Reish Lakish b'shach shenichnas v'nachrim lahechal. So Reish Lakish says that at the time when that we were invaded and the enemies came into the hechal, so Rao Kruvim Amurim Zebizeh. So they saw the Kruvim that were intertwined one with another, either the actual Kruvim, and we're describing the Romans, or we're talking about the murals. Either way. So Hotziam L'Shok V'Amru Yisrael Halalu Shebrachasam Bracha V'Klalasam Klala. These Jewish people, you know, every time they give a bracha, that's serious, and every time they give a klala, that's serious. You know, those Jewish people. So Yasku B'Dvarim Halalu. So already, it's not right. The shock of this being in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So it surprised the world for years, right? Centuries. Right, this goes back now to what probably we're describing the Romans, or if not the Romans, we're describing the Babylonians. Either way, like they just couldn't believe, probably the Romans, but they couldn't believe that this is the kinds of pictures that are found in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Miyadi zilum shenemer kol mechavda hizilua kiru ervasa, and they made fun of us and they degraded us because they saw ervasa. Right, they saw these kinds of pictures in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Okay. So, surprising, shocking. Again, right, the simple understanding, of course, is that it speaks to the relationship that the Jewish people have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Granted, by the way, it's a graphic depiction of the relationship, but nevertheless, that's what it is. It's a depiction of the relationship. Okay. There is a little bit more to go in the daf today. We are going to finish the daf. We'll go through the last section, but, I'll be remiss if I just don't mention it. And that is really a fascinating tosos that covers most of today's daf. Right, it starts on the Amud Aleph. You could turn back to Nundal Amud Aleph, and it looks like a really small tosos, but it spills over to page two, to the Amud Beis, and it covers the entirety of the Amud Beis. It's a massive tosfos, and what bothers tosos over here? So you can see the beginning. It's great. I'm just going to read the beginning of tosos on Nundal Amud Aleph. So Kruvim did Tsuras. Anishalti Alosam Shemitzarim b'Machzorim Tsuros Chayos va'Ofos. So he says, you know, they make Machzorim. Now remember, by the way, Tosos is before the printing press. You make a Machzor, it's a big deal. In other words, you gotta handwrite the whole Machzor. But in other words, it's, you know, it's special. It's a Machzor for Rosh Hashanah, for Yom Kippur. So what they would do is that they would get an artist and he would paint pictures in the Machzor. Pictures of animals, animals, birds. So in the Machzor, appropriate or not appropriate? Or better asked, usher or not usher? Meaning, are you allowed to make pictures of these things? So, and listen to Tosos' answer. Such a great Tosos. So, im yafa osim im lav. Vehishavti, and I answered. So one of the Balei Tosos is speaking over here. Nearly devada lo yafa osim. I don't think it's appropriate. Now, he didn't say usher. He just says, I don't think it's appropriate. Shemitok shemastalchels betsuros halalu emechavnen libam lavim shebeshamayim. You know, if the pictures are really nice, so, you know what happens when, you know, you bring a device into shul. So you're tempted to look at it, and it's going to distract you from your kavana. So Tosos, obviously, you know, not with the technology we had, but look, you got nice pictures in your machzor. It's going to distract you. You're not going to be able to really concentrate in your davening if you got nice pictures to look at. So the ein mechavnin libel lavin shemashamayim you ein kan iser, but meanwhile it's not aser. And Tosos goes on, and this is the part where I'm gonna bail. But Tosos goes on to discuss. So if you're drawing a picture on paper, I mean, two dimensional. So is that an iser of not making? Is that fall under the iser of making images? Okay, good. So Tosos discusses, deliberates. Okay. He obviously is of the position that that a picture, a two dimensional picture, is no problem whatsoever. Again, he doesn't recommend it to put in your machzor. It's going to distract you. Okay, and again, it's a really lengthy and long discussion. But it piggybacks off of our Gemara over here, because our Gemara over here clearly had murals in the second base of Mikdash. Okay, what was on the murals? Okay, so, it depends on the maturity of your audience, but if they're mature enough to hear, you could tell them. But, you gotta make sure they're mature enough to hear it. Okay, we're back to the Gemara, and we're just gonna now finish up the daf. We're at the two dots. Ushasi Aisa Nikres. So there was a stone in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, was the Evan HaShasiyah. And so when there was an Aron, the Aron was placed on top of it. And when there was no Aron, so fine. So all you're left with is just simply a stone on the ground. Okay. So the Shesi Aisa Nikris, Tana. Shemimena hu shesasas ha'olam. So Evan Shtia, what is that? So basically this is the building block. It's the foundation of the entire world. Tanan keman de amar mitzion nivra ha'olam. Now, the world was created from what point in time? In other words, the Gemara's assumption over here is that basically the world started with a point, in other words, a piece of matter, if you will, and expanded from that point in time. Okay, I'm not prepared at this point in time to give any kind of scientific explanation, right? That's not what I'm here for. But in terms of a Masorah that we have, so in terms of the genesis of the world, and again, just from a Gemara standpoint, how it was created. So the Gemara says, gives a description over here in terms of basically it started from this Evan, from this stone. So basically it's where everything started. Everything was built upon it. It was literally the building block. So V'tanan keman d'amar, mitzion nivra olam, d'tanya Rabbi Eliezer omer olam mi'emtzi asa nivra. So and the Gemara over here cites various positions amongst the Amoraim. In terms of the world was created from what point? So it was created from the center point, according to Rabbi Eliezer. Shenemar batzekes afar lamutzak uregavim yuduvku. Basically, earth was piled one on top of the other around its center. Rabbi Yeshua amar olam min hatzdadim nivra, and Rabbi Yeshua says that it was created from the perimeter and it went interior. Again, I don't fully know what I'm describing over here. Right, this is obviously. This is stuff that goes well above my pay grade. But shenemar ki l'shelag yomar ahoy aretz v'geshem matar v'geshem matros uzo. Okay, and the pasuk over here, right, difficult to explain, but the pasuk over here gives a sense of things being built from the outside in. Rabbi Yitzchak Amar Evan Yara Akash Baruch Hu Biyam Akash Baruch Hu threw a stone into the sea mimenu nishtas haolam, and from there the world was created. meaning that basically the world was water, and then a stone was thrown in, and earth materialized from there. Shenema amad amadana hatva'u umi yara evan pinasa. And the pasuk over here describes the stone being thrown and being the cornerstone of the world. The chachamim mitzion nivra. And according to the chachamim, the world wasn't built from the center out, not from the exterior interior, not from a stone thrown in, but rather, according to the chachamim, it was built from a stone. What stone? That's what we're describing. Shenemar mizmal asafa el alokim Hashem v'omer mitzion michlal yofi mimenu muchlal yafyav shel olam. And it was from this stone, the Evan Ashesia, that the world was created. Tanya will enter the Bryce, Rabbi Lazar Gadol Omer, Ela told us, Yishamayim Va'aretz, Bihi Baram, V'yom Asos Hashem Elokim, Eretz V'Shamayim, told us Shamayim, Mishamayim Nivru. So any of the derivatives of Shamayim is made from Shamayim, and told us Aretz, Me'aretz Nivru. And anything, any derivatives of the ground are coming from Aretz. V'chachamim Omer, Me'la Ve'la Mitzion Nivru. And according to the Chachamim, no. It's coming from Tzion, meaning that the whole world starts with the Evan Ashesia. Shenemar Mizmar La'asaf Alokim Hashem Davar Ve'ikra Eretz Me'mizrach Shemesh Ad Mavo Ve'omer Mitzion Mechlal Yofi Alokim Ofiyam Mimenu Mechlal Yofiyav Shel Olam. Okay, and it's the Evan Ashesia, which is really the basis and the building block of the entire world. Let's quickly review. We saw in the beginning of today's daf, first the Mishnah, that went over the Hazas that are done with the Dam Par, Dam Seir, both in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and also towards the Parochas. Now the bloods are mixed together, and so stops the Mishnah, and then the next Mishnah will pick it up from that point in time. In terms of the Gemara, our first big discussion today, where's the Aron? It's not in the second base of Mikdash. That we know definitively. We don't know where it is now. Okay, that we also know. But where was it taken? Who took it away? Okay, Machlokas. Major Machlokas. Earlier this morning, I summarized three positions, basically. Either it was taken to Bavel by Nebuchadnezzar, or it went subterranean in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and that was done by Yoshiyahu, or it was put in some other area in the Beis HaMikdash, right? The deer Eitzim is a possible candidate. Okay, so, but we don't know. The Aron, the Mishnah gives a description of the poles of the Aron, which were kept in the Aron even after the Aron was put into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the poles now pushing through the Paroches and giving the impression of Dade Isha. Good, that was the Gemara went over there on the Amud Aleph, and then on Yantiv, so we peel back the curtain so that the people could see the Kruvim in an embrace, and the Gemara notes that is a much different behavior than we were out in the Midbar. Out in the Midbar, everything was covered. Right, any kli that was taken out, it was covered by the Kohanim, so the Levim wouldn't see it. And the Gemara says basically, Erisin Nisuin in the Midbar, our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Erisin, private Sanua, right? We didn't have that intimate relationship. We came into Eretz Yisrael, and now we had a base of Mikdash. Okay, intimate relationship. Okay, and Anyant, if you could peel back the curtain. Okay, the image of the Kruvim in an embrace. What about in the second base of Mikdash? What exactly were the people seeing? So not the actual Kruvim, but they saw murals, the murals that were painted in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. What did the murals have pictures of? Okay, so it also had pictures of husband and wife in an embrace. And probably even more graphic than that, but that you can see the Rashi on the top of the Amud Beis. Okay, anyway, when the Goyim came in and they destroyed the base of Mikdash and they saw these murals, Like literally, they just couldn't understand. Like, what is going on over there? What are those people thinking? What are they doing? Okay, and we became degraded in the eyes of the Goyim. And our last topic of discussion, as we're now on the Amud Beis, in summary, is that we went over the Evan HaShesia. Why is it called the Evan HaShesia? So because the world was created from the Evan HaShesia. It's the centrality of the world, right? I don't have the Rambam in front of me, by the way, but read the Rambam. Rambam gives exactly this description that the world was created. It really becomes the point center of the creation of the entire world. The Rambam really adopts this position, and even though the Gemara acknowledges that this is not the only opinion, and there are other opinions in terms of how the world was created from the center outward, from the exterior to the interior. There are various opinions. Derivatives of Shemaim, derivatives of Aretz. There are other opinions, but the Gemara says, but our mission is of the position that the world was created from the Evan HaShesia.